From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, June 16th, 2017. And on this day, we'll get the details on the budget stalemate in Augusta and the future of solar power once again in the legislature. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Well, lawmakers are still deadlocked over a budget to operate state government starting July 1st. The issues holding up the agreement are centered on school funding, and tempers are short. Mal Leary joins us from the State House to talk about what a lack of a state budget will mean for the state. Mal, how you doing?
Pretty good.
So what happens if there's no budget come July 1st?
Well, there'll be what's called a partial shutdown of state government. I say only partial because essential state services will go on. For example, state police, prison guards. But there's a hitch. While they can be ordered to work under the emergency powers of the governor, they can't be paid until the money's appropriated with a budget. Eventually, they'll be paid, but the checks can't be written without the legal authority of a budget passed by the legislature. There'll be a lot of state programs that won't feel the impact until after the long 4th of July weekend because they're not operating over the holiday. But if you're planning to take the family to a state park, they won't be operating, at least based on what's happened in the past. They're not considered essential.
What happens to other state programs that aren't essential, and who gets to decide what is and what isn't essential?
Well, there's a lot of programs that will be shut down. If history's any example, we'll be talking about thousands of state workers out of work the day after the 4th of July with no budget. We went through this shutdown in 1991. Then that was something that lawmakers who served then and reporters who were around then will never forget. Thousands of workers descended on the Capitol protesting the lack of a budget. It was packed with protesters. Thousands camped out in Capitol Park across the street. There were nearly every day loud, raucous demonstrations, tempers short, people screaming at each other in the hallways. And as for who's essential, in 1991, the then Attorney General, who's now a state senator, Mike Carpenter, and the governor then, John McKernan, were having to meet several times a day to figure out exactly who was essential. So there is some history to work from. Reporters were being called to news conferences two, three times a day as some agreement was reached that one group or another was essential and should be called back to work. And then there were the lawsuits, Nora, a lot of them. Several every single day were being filed by some group or another who felt they were essential and should be allowed to come back to work.
That sounds like a huge mess if there's not a budget. Why can't they agree on one?
Well, this goes back to the citizen initiative last fall. The 3% income tax surcharge on incomes over $200,000 a year. The voters passed it. But many Republicans say that's hurting small businesses that often pay their taxes through their personal income tax and will hurt efforts to bring professionals like doctors to the state because of that higher tax rate. Many Democrats are willing to compromise by finding a different funding source for education than that surtax. But they want more money for education than the House Republicans have agreed to. Right now, the Republicans in the House are holding to like a $50 million in additional education funding when folks on the other side are saying it should be closer to $150 million.
So what happens next?
Well, over this weekend, we're going to have leadership and members of the Appropriations Committee continuing to work to see if they can come up with some sort of compromise. The legislature comes back into session on Monday, already sort of behind the eight ball because they won't have that 10-day window in which the governor has to veto something, even if they reach an agreement and passed it by sometime Monday night.
Okay, Mal Leary, thank you.
Thank you, Nora.
The future of solar power in Maine is once again up for grabs in the state legislature. Floor debate is expected soon, and as Fred Bever reports, powerful interests from Maine and around the country are trying to shape the outcome.
Fortunette Mueller is not a fan of a decision on solar energy that the Maine Public Utilities Commission made earlier this year.
It's expensive, it's largely unworkable, and it's probably illegal.
Mueller, one of the founding partners of the Maine-based solar installation company Revision Energy, is referring to the PUC's decision to phase out credits given to residential customers who sell solar-generated electricity back to the power grid. The commission devised a new system it said would free consumers who do not have solar power from subsidizing those who do. Critics, including Mueller, want lawmakers to nullify the regulator's plan before it goes into effect next year.
What we're asking the legislature to do is to not let this rule go into effect.
Mueller's company started in a garage 15 years ago and now employs 170 people in three states. He's supporting a measure that would keep the credit system that's fostered that growth, called net metering or net energy billing, in place until at least 2021. He says ending net metering without a more forward-looking and data-driven replacement would be a costly gift to the state's utilities. They're prospering, he says, from new construction of bulk transmission systems paid for by consumers. Those infrastructure investments grow less necessary, he says, as more and more distributed generation sources, such as local solar generation, reduce demand on the grid.
If your first goal is to protect utility profits, then you don't want to lower transmission and distribution costs because those are utility profits.
Mueller's just one of the antagonists in a multi-party showdown over the bill. It also involves environmental advocates, industrial and residential consumer representatives, and the electric transmission and distribution utilities.
Net metering today favors the business model of the large solar installers.
That's John Carroll, spokesman for Central Maine Power. CMP wants to end what it calls a cost shift net metering creates by letting solar users off the hook for some of the expense of maintaining the poles and wires they depend on. With the amount of solar power doubling every 2 years in Maine's energy mix, he says, the burden on ratepayers and the windfall for solar power generators could quickly rise to tens of millions of dollars.
This is really an amazing exercise of muscle. To their credit, people who have solar believe in it passionately, and they have an army of 3,000 people plus who advocate for this. We have 620,000 customers, and absent those 3,000, they're not passionate about something that they don't see or they don't feel.
CMP is a power player, to be sure, with a coterie of lobbyists working the issue inside the statehouse, and their effort to kill net metering does have outside support. A utility trade group called the Edison Electric Institute is targeting lawmakers with a social media campaign opposing the bill, and another group with roots in the fossil fuel industry called the Consumers Energy Alliance took out full-page newspaper ads against the bill last week. On the other side, many of the state's big industrial energy customers are opposing the utilities, saying that solar and other distributed power sources can slow escalating bills for transmission infrastructure. And solar installers such as Revision and Sunrun, the nation's biggest rooftop solar company, have formed a new lobbying group which is running radio ads in Maine to support net metering survival.
This is the first bill that I've ever had advertised on the radio.
Senator Tom Saviello, the Wilton Independent who introduced the original version of the bill, says he's a bit surprised at the intensity of the campaigns it's triggered.
I don't consider it a power play. I just consider it as kind of a, maybe a little bit bigger than a baby step, but a step towards recognizing solar as being important in the state.
The bill has morphed considerably since Saviello first wrote it, with committee members sending two competing measures to the full legislature. Both versions, however, would undo a PUC decision requiring new meters to measure the output of every solar facility in the state, including output that's used only on site. That's broadly seen as a costly and undue governmental intrusion on private property. With so many interests working the bill, it's difficult to predict which, if any, version will make it through the legislature and what might survive the governor's veto pen. The bill could be debated as early as today. If nothing new is enacted, continued uncertainty in Maine's solar marketplace will be the likely result. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, June 16th, 2017. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.